Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
It's the Drink Talking with the Thinking Drinkers, Ben McFarland and Tom Sandon, and Mistress of Wine, Sam Capon. All the booze news and views, from Absinthe to Zinfandel. Happy Hour starts now.
Hello, listeners.
This is happening. It's the Drink Talking. We're here yet again. I'm joined by Sam Capon, Mistress of Wine, Master of Wine.
Howdy.
Knows everything about wine. You all right?
I'm very well. You?
Yeah, fine. Good. Everything's dandy. Tom, you're looking dishevelled, but also dapper at the same time. I don't know how you pull it off.
Well, I'll show you that later. I'm good. You know, I've just been drinking whiskey this week, so it's been a good week.
Excellent. Without further ado, I can't be doing with the chit chat that we normally indulge in.
Okay. Boring.
Because I've got more important things to say.
Yours is good. Yours is good, Sam.
Well, there's chat. I've got no chat. No. So I'm hosting this shenanigans today, and spit or swallow is how we kick it off. And my swallow is something that all you beer nerds are going to be very excited about, because do you know about the campaign for real ale? Hello!
The camera. Campaign for,
camera, good people, historically did really good stuff in the 70s, basically saved the beer world from obscurity,
extinction,
exactly. When they were under threat from big breweries making bland, fizzy, boring beer, they stood up for real beer, but specifically cask ale. Which back then was seen as the vanguard of proper beer, and anything else was seen as crap beer, which back then it was quite polarised, it was quite black and white. But as the years have gone by and the craft scene has emerged...
Exploded,
absolutely. A boom has occurred. That has become a lot more cloudy in terms of its definition. You can have great lagers, you can have great keg beer, artisan, independent, really well-made beer comes in many different forms. Mm. And this posed a bit of a problem for Camera, because they've always championed cask ale and real ale, which is the hand pump. You go to a pub, just I could go into the ins and out of what cask ale is, but essentially, if you go to a pub, it's the one where they're pulling the hand pump back and forth. I'm doing the action. It's a visual
thing. It's arousing.
So, but you know what I mean? They've been very, very, very protective of that way of serving beer, and had to be, you can't have cask breathers, you can't muck about with it, and have been quite militant and dogmatic about how they serve their beer and what they consider good beer. Now, the fact that good beer is now emerged in other forms and formats and the same with ciders and perries means that they've become a little bit obsolete as a campaign group. They've got thousands of members, I think.
So we usually, was it 80,000?
It's
the biggest member. At one time, it was the biggest consumer member.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a massive following, and they've got a very noisy minority who go to the meetings and are particularly forthright in their views. But the guys at the top have realised that they need to move with the times, and after consulting lots of members, they've come up with some proposed changes, which still have to go through all the AGMs and all the kind of meetings. But this is what they're saying. Camera festivals are going to be offering a wider range of quality beer, sizes and pairings in all formats. Essentially, they've embraced other styles of beer. They're engaging with drinkers of all types. They're essentially saying that a wider range of drinks and establishments are going to be celebrated, but they're still going to be maintaining that cask ale at its best is still the the finest form of beer.
Well, it is craft beer, isn't it? If you're going to talk about what craft beer is, then cask beer is about
and it's about knowledge as well. And I think what they need to do and what they're doing, and I think they're moving in the right direction, is that there's no one really shouting about beer as a body and telling people why it's better than wine with food, maybe, or the different styles, and educating. So they can take on that role now because it's a broader remit. But like I say, this hasn't gone through.
And none of those more types of beer and whatnot. Now, arguably, is a time to start doing that, to go, actually, there's more sorts, it's more diverse, it's more appropriate for lots of different occasions. I mean,
needs an organisation to take a bit of ownership of this. And what do you know? Camera's there and it's got all these members already.
And it's consumer rather than a trade, so it's good. And I haven't got any of the complications of being funded by Heineken or the big breweries. They're an independent organisation. And I think a lot of beer writers and people within the beer world have had a lot of issues with Camera in the past. Namely, they've often campaigned for beer to be as cheap as possible, which from a consumer point of view is good. But actually, in the long term, it doesn't benefit the breweries because it makes no money. And they've been rightly criticised, but at the same time, they're a consumer group and that's what they do. And it's a bit like criticising the Catholic Church. If they start going...
Easy.
No, but I'm just saying that they have rules.
Camera's not gone that far.
No, but I'm saying, no. I don't know. No, but the point being that they have a stance that's very entrenched in their history, and if you start wavering from that, then what's the point? Yeah. But they have realised that actually, in this day and age, you can't start saying that anything that isn't cask ale is bad beer because it's just simply not true.
I mean, as a beer fan, I would say two things. I'd say that Camera, one of the reasons that I did get a bit more enthusiastic about beer when I was younger. So they were doing a very important job when I was 19 or 20.
And how did you come across them?
Well, they just had labels everywhere and they were just passionately pushing different beers. So if you're just drinking Stella Artois and didn't really know any better, it was quite a symbol of change, you know, let's try something different. My dad drank bitter, so you always say you don't drink what your dad drank, so I kind of moved away from it, but they clung on to it, so that was important. The other thing to say though is we recently went to one of those Camera events in King's Cross, and it was, and this is not a criticism necessarily, but it was full of 50 plus year old men.
I think of it as being full of frumpy men in sandals,
and the problem with that is not it's their thing. We walked out and said, well, that's fine, that's their thing, and we've got plenty of other experiences of beer where we might fit the demographic, but actually it is a problem. You can't just say it's their thing. They need to step up and actually make beer their thing, and that's a
but
much
it still can
wider
be their
audience.
Yes, yeah, it still can be their thing, and what Camera stand for is it's essentially making sure that these huge big breweries with a lot of money who would be happy to dominate the market don't get their way, and there's a barrier to that happening, and it's they fertilize this really thriving, blooming beer scene. But at the same time, they've got to wake up and they have done. And it's great. Mm. So if you're a Camera member, then do go down to the meetings. I know they're stunningly boring, but go down there and vote and say, I really want to get behind this. And
just vote on, you know, changing the way the meetings run.
Yeah. And we wrote our first book about American beer for Camera, which had no cask ale in it.
We owe them.
Yeah.
Well, actually,
I paid nothing for that.
That was in debt.
So the sort of the stalwarts for cask ale are relaxing their approach to it. Now,
good for them.
In other news, folks, I've been reading The Guardian.
Are you making a charitable contribution?
No, just put them behind a paywall.
Bloody
put
hell.
Them behind a paywall or don't.
Yeah. Stop
don't asking
me.
For
you've got
yeah,
money
I
to
agree.
Rebrand, haven't
yeah.
you?
Yeah, no, but I like it. I think they're great. I think their sport's great.
What about their world news, Ben?
Yeah, the world news is good.
Yeah, I like that sometimes. Yeah.
Anyway, there was a report in The Guardian that said the Alcohol Health Alliance, who, if you don't have to dig too deep into them to find out that their whole remit is essentially stop people drinking and telling people that drinking is rather naughty. They are demanding that cigarette-style warnings on alcoholic drinks are implemented because they did a survey that said 10% of Britons don't realise that drinking alcohol is related to cancer. All right, so they did this survey, but they asked respondents to spontaneously name a disease that they associate with alcohol.
Okay.
So liver,
a lot of them
cirrhosis.
Went, cirrhosis, or those, they could have said anything. Mm. They didn't say, do you think yes or no is alcohol related to cancer. So, in, from that point, it's disingenuous. Now,
also, can I just butt in there quickly? Also, I think these things have a slightly grey area. So, for example, surely I think there's enough things out there that would suggest that, you know, a glass of red wine a day is not a bad thing. Right. And it's not like smoking is carcinogenous. Full stop. Right. Sorry, am I shitting?
No. It's just all good. This is all good. This is exactly what I want to say. Now, I mean, most of the cancers that are linked to alcohol are very rare and thankfully curable. The risk of dying from these cancers are, compared to other cancers, relatively small. Now, there still is a risk. Mm. I'm not saying there's no risk, but there is a risk. So breast cancer being one, okay?
Right.
Breast cancer being rightly linked to alcohol. If you drink lots of alcohol, you're more likely to get breast cancer, but you're more likely by a very small amount. Mm. So it's about risk management. Yeah. It's about grown-ups.
That's exactly what my husband says.
Okay, it's about going, well, okay, there is a greater risk, but here is the information, and you as an adult
can take it and
can
digest
take
it
or leave it and digest it. So there are loads of carcinogenics out there and other things, burgers, sausages, but you wouldn't have pictures of, I mean, they're literally wanting pictures of diseased livers. Mm.
On bottle of wine.
On bottle of wine. You wouldn't put pictures of bowel cancer on sausages or bacon.
Please don't.
No.
I eat a lot of sausages.
And it's not, I don't think it's a job.
I love a sausage sandwich.
Yeah. I had a mushroom sausage at the weekend.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Make room for the mushroom. Remember that advert? Make room for the mushroom.
Sausage, mushroom.
Sausage. It was a mushroom and caramelised onion sausage. Oh. It was a vegan sausage.
Yes, I see.
Okay.
Oh, no, I don't see. That's not a sausage.
That's not a sausage.
That's vegetables. That's a tube of veg.
And yesterday I had a pumpkin and sweet potato burger.
No.
Nonsense.
That's a patty.
Get out.
That's a patty.
Yeah, I wouldn't buy either of them again, let's put it that way.
No. Mm. Anyway, the point
being... You're not getting a patty on the back for that.
It's not up to the bottles to tell people about this very nuanced argument or these nuanced percentages of how much more likely you are to get cancer from drinking.
That's, and also, it's crazy, because a lot of it will be down to genetic...
Well, is that, but also, I mean, we've got the Public Health England, funded by the taxpayer. They spent $4.5 billion last year telling people about...
The dangers of drink.
Of the health dangers, or risk to health. And it's their job, not the job of labellers. It's just really daft. And also, if you're going to do that, you might as well start talking about the benefits of wine. Of drinking alcohol. So this is linked, and it's important. In March 2017, the British Medical Journal, actual boffins, actual scientists from the University of Cambridge and University College London, revealed and discovered that moderate drinkers have a lower risk of heart attacks when compared to teetotalers. That is a fact. That is something they asked 2 million people this. And it's a fact. It was poo-pooed by all these organisations, these anti-alcohol organisations that said, well, you're much better off doing exercise and eating healthily. You can do all those things. It's not one or the other.
Yeah. And it's got antioxidants, resveratrol. Is that what it's called? Resveratrol? But yeah, I mean particularly in red wine.
It proves clinically and statistically.
I need it after I put the kids to bed.
Well, that's the point. Probably the heart thing is quite a big thing. It's if it lowers blood pressure and just a couple of glasses, two glasses, helps you to let off a bit of steam.
One bottle, two bottles.
For instance, I mean, if you're going to do that, take hand gliding. Very dangerous.
Yeah.
It's very dangerous. But people who go hand gliding know it's dangerous, but they weigh up the risk of hand gliding. There's a higher than normal chance of me dying from hang gliding than
not doing it.
But the feeling of flying through the air with the wind
is
in
your
hair is amazing.
Is it nice?
I've never been. It sounds fucking dangerous. No, but the point being that people know the risks. And what these anti-alcohol lobbies and health lobbies who are saying that we should put these labels on, they're saying it's either abstinence is good, drinking is bad. It's not.
There's nuances.
Yes.
There's
grey.
You can't trust. If you say moderate drinking is all right, which is true, if they're terrified of doing that.
But it's like drinking during pregnancy.
But they don't trust
us. It changes almost annually. Mm. You know, I remember it was always like, you can't drink anything. Then it's like, well, actually, you can have a little bit. Or we have a little bit at this stage. And it's the same with weaning. I mean, I remember when weaning my son, it was like you were told to do it at a certain number of weeks. A year later, they're recommending a completely different number of weeks.
I think we all know if you're doing something like that and you're just not sure and you just don't drink. I don't think there is any mystery over... being an intoxicant or being something that's very good for you. I don't think there's any real confusion over that.
But it's not a black and white thing. They've seen what they've done with cigarettes and said, look, there's no safe levels to smoking, which scientifically and statistically, that seems to be the case. Whereas with alcohol, it's not.
Okay.
So instead of giving us the facts and telling people the actual facts.
It's
immensely patronising. It would involve saying to someone, you can drink moderately, which is fine.
Also,
but then they don't trust us to just drink moderately.
Or to, take some responsibility and work it out itself. But the things as well, like certainly, also I'm going to speak for my kind of category, wine is an absolute centuries old culture. I mean, it's been done all around the world. You know, people have been making wine forever, and people can embrace it all around the world, and it's all part of a lifestyle. So you eat nice food, you drink nice wine, you exercise. I mean, you know, sitting and having a really nice meal and a couple of glasses of wine is not going out and boshing a gram of drugs, is it?
Yeah.
Or you know, sitting and you know, doing shot after shot after shot. You know, there's very different ways of drinking, and we do have a very big binge culture here.
Mm. It's the fact that they don't trust us. It's this idea that if you tell society, if the message goes out officially from the government, from health authorities, that drinking moderately is actually good for you.
Oh, I see.
They will not trust us as a society to do
what is moderate.
I have a couple of bottles of this week. Instead of putting labels on bottles saying with diseased livers, let's educate, let's deal in facts, in science, let's not deal in misinformation.
There we go.
Love it.
So there we go. That's
nice
my
one.
Spit.
Good. I'm with you.
Was which spitting. Was not funny in any way. But
no, but it
it's
was
just
worthy.
It's all right to have a drink. That's the bottom line. Now, Tom, you've got some.
I've got three small
little flagons of what looks like whiskey.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This is It's the Drink Talking.
I'm going to do whiskey. It turned out we haven't done single malt whiskey yet on the podcast, which seemed like a bit of an oversight. It's a massive category. I was going to do coffee tequila. The guys at Cascabel, they sent me a nice bottle. Thank you, guys. We will get to that. I couldn't get a bottle of Patron, which I was going to compare it to because
I drank mine on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, there's a lot of love for coffee tequila. But no, we haven't done whiskey, so I thought we'd do single malt. If you're tuning in, you're a beginner to single malt whiskey, then I probably should give you a bit of a background. And what we'll do over the coming podcasts is try and do lots of different styles. Just generally speaking, whiskey is made from cereal that's mashed, fermented, distilled and aged. In the case of malt whiskey, the cereal is barley. And single malt comes from one single distillery, so that's why it's single malt. It must be aged for a minimum of 3 years in oak barrels and must be bottled at 40% ABV minimum. They can vary a lot, which is why the connoisseurs get their knickers in a twist. There's aging, different copper stills. So there's lots to explore. It's a massive subject, but once you do explore it, you start to adore it and you get really into it. So for the purposes of the podcast, I'm going to try and break this down, guys, as a regional thing. The way we've educated on whiskey in the past, it sort of helps to dissect it by geography. There are four regions: Highland, Lowland, Speyside and the Islands, generally speaking. But the regions are not prescriptive of flavour. So While the lowland has historically produced lighter whiskies, Highlands are vast and sort of varied. Speyside is kind of sweeter and richer. Islands, peaty. That's a very big generalisation. So as we talk about the regions, bear that in mind. While there are some accents of flavour that are relevant and we can apply to the region, generally speaking, you can make any sort of whiskey anywhere. But it has to be in Scotland if you want to call it Scotch, and it has to come from one distillery and it has to be aged for 3 years. So there we go. Today we're going to start with Speyside. And we're going to start with Speyside as a region because it's probably one of the most important, certainly where there is the highest concentration of whisky making. It's one of the smallest regions, but actually about 60% of Scotland's single malt whisky production comes from here. The big guys that you'll have heard of if you're new to whisky, Glenlivet, Glenfiddich, Glengrant, Macallan, these big distilleries come from these areas.
Does anyone make whisky in England?
Yeah, you can make whisky anywhere in the world.
And what would you call it?
Whisky.
It's not Scotch.
You can't call it Scotch single malt. No, you call it whisky. Mm. You can make it in a style, but if it's not being bottled in Scotland, Americans make whisky. They call it bourbon or American whisky, rye whisky. The Japanese make fantastic whiskies, very similar, some of them into the Scottish style. They took a lot of the techniques from Scotland across. If you want to drink single malt Scotch, you know, it's being made there according to those rules. Now, those rules, some felt have been quite confining, restrictive to it. And for some listeners, there'll be a reputation still of the Scotch drinker being quite a sort of tweed-wearing moustache guy of a barber or someone who stands there and, oh, I love whiskey. that's a bit unfair, and actually a lot's changing. And we're going to try some whiskies today that show how much they're doing. I was recently drinking Glenmorangie private editions. They've had 9 different private editions and they've all been aged in different wood. And just the aging process can really affect how the whisky changes flavours. So there's a lot you can still do with it within the confines of it. And we're going to try Macallan 10-year-old first. Now, this will range around the £70 mark for a bottle.
It's the 70 quid.
It's a 10-year-old sherry oak. So this has been rested exclusively in sherry barrels. So we'll talk a little bit about the wood in a minute. We'll talk about the age as well. People often ask us, one of the most common questions we have is, what does the age mean? Is it important? Is it an older whiskey better? This is a 10-year-old. It means it spent a minimum of 10 years in those sherry casks. It is important. Age is just a number, man. Yeah, woo, and all that crap. But actually, it is important because it means the minimum amount of time a whiskey spent in there. So it is important.
And would this come all from one cask?
Not from one cask, no. That's why I say one single distillery. So they would have to try and find consistency, find barrels from around a warehouse to meet the consistent product.
And I guess it's about sort of a blend, but it's not.
Well, it's a blend of all the same whiskies. Yeah. But also, which is why they say a minimum.
With the age as well, presumably an element is finding out what you like. So you might go, oh, I don't like that, that's too spicy. Or you'll go, oh, I love that,
yeah,
it's nice and soft.
The wood itself that it's spending the time in is going to affect it. So American oak will give it the vanillas. This has been in sherried oak, so this will give slightly different sort of wintry fruits, raisins, and a sherried note. The important thing to say about age, if you're new to whisky, is probably go for this 10 to 15 year old mark, because you're going to pay somewhere in the region of, I mean, this is the Macallan and it's quite a special 10 year old, but you'll probably spend around £40 for a 10 to 15 year old, and that's probably about a good starting point, 30 to 40 quid, just to learn a bit more. And you'll get a lot of the complexity and you'll learn a lot about whisky from that age group. Don't splash out on old kit. Look at the stick Wayne Rooney got.
Come on, Rooney. Yeah. You can do better than that.
So no, you don't need to splash out on old kit for the sake of it. You know, you just get something that's around that age group. What do you think of this? Now, what are you getting?
I think I can pick up a bit of sort of caramel.
Okay, yeah, okay. There's some sweet toffiness, toffee notes
cedar
up front.
Wood, sort of
and a bit of maybe a bit of figs.
Wood. Absolutely. Very good, Sam. That's I think that's on their tasting notes. dried fruits, toffee, wood spice.
That's lovely.
Now, the Spey region.
Almonds.
Almonds or almonds.
Almond.
The Spey region is typically sweeter. The Spey River runs over granite, softer water, slightly sweeter, which is why, as a generalisation, we talk about Speyside whiskies as having that slightly sweeter quality about them.
I think that's maybe why I like it.
Yeah.
It's not too aggressive for me.
No, it's really soft
Very
and
pretty.
Sweet.
It's for the ladies, because they can't handle big flavours.
Harsh, but fair. No, it's a nice, really, I mean, the Macallan, they've got a really serious wood programme. They're very careful about their wood. Much like you, Ben, I'm sure. They look after their casks. They source them very carefully, so they've got a huge supply of cask. So the wood elements of it should affect it. They say up to 80% of what you taste from the distiller, the new make spirits that goes into the barrel before it's been aged, 80% of what you taste has been affected by the barrel. So there we go. We'll talk a bit more about wood now because we can show how that mixes it up with the Glenfiddich. We're going to have some Glenfiddich. And guess what, guys? I've done something really nice for you today. I've chosen one that works for Sam and one that works for Ben.
Ooh, okay, what we've done?
I've got Winter Storm Glenfiddich for Sam, which costs £200 a bottle.
Oh, thanks.
And then I've got the IPA cask for you, Ben, which costs £40 a bottle because you're a peasant. You get the cheap one.
IPA one. So this has been aged in beer barrels.
Beer barrels, yeah. I'll talk about Sam's first because...
I like the name. Winter Storm.
Oh, Winter Storm. It comes in a really amazing white bottle.
So who did this? Who's this by?
Glenfiddich.
And the first one was Macallan.
Yes,
this is
the Macallan. And the second one's the Glenfiddich. Glenfiddich, a very big distillery. They were the first people, actually, in 1963 to market a single malt. And they got a lot of grief for that, interestingly, in 63, saying single malt, because it wasn't on trend then. And look at them go now. They're now the biggest single malt producer in the world.
And what makes a £200 bottle of scotch cost £200?
Good question. It's a 21-year-old, so it spent minimum of 21 years in barrels, which is a long time. And also, they finished it in Canadian ice wine barrels. So that's why I've chosen it for you. It's a wine link, ice wine, Canadian, which gives it a very different finish.
I prefer the cheaper one.
Do you? Okay, that's fine. Well, it's not... I mean, it's £200 now. I mean, the reality is they've sold out of it, so it's become very rare on thewhiskeyexchange.com. You can probably pick it up from other specialists. I get a lot of sweetness off that. Tropical fruit, they say Turkish Delight, which actually is a bit of a heads up on what it is.
Quite leathery.
Do you get okay? Well, that's 21 years in wood is going to
quite high. Quite high acid. I don't find it. It's kind of the one we found before was kind of just sort of softer, more kind of figgy, more caramel. This is probably much more for the connoisseur. It just feels kind of. Sort of
I like that. I do like that.
Tighter and more assertive. But I preferred the slightly softer one before.
Okay,
wow, that's quite strong as well.
And it feels
really feeling a lot of heat on the front of the tongue there.
Feeling a lot.
Wow. And so I've got the IPA one.
You've got the IPA. And now, that has been, again, that's been finished, obviously cheaper for you, Ben. But, again, part of the Glenfiddich experimental series, just a quick word on that.
They've done three now.
And this was one of the first pairs that they did. And, yeah, they worked with a Speyside craft brewery and they created a special beer, which was aged in the Glenfiddich casks for a month, then returned to the distillery, and they had 3 months in those casks.
Now, I'm slightly ignorant on this, but... I can't imagine that the IPA, because it can't be much more than, I mean, the maximum must be 10%. How would the IPA really affect the wood?
Well, it dips into the pores.
It does, it would, but then as soon as you put...
It would.
but as soon as you put actual spirit in there, I just find it...
A bit gimmicky.
Well, you've tasted it.
I'm not getting any beer influence there at all. I think it's a very nice whiskey.
Having tried it, I did get this slightly floral finish on it. It's almost, and it is it is a stretch. It's a stretch. But if you taste a lot of whiskies next to it, you do, I would argue, get a little bit of hop on there. And that is, it's very subtle. It isn't for everyone.
It's a placebo effect.
It could be. It could be knowing that you've put it in there.
My fear would be, I think it's a very nice whiskey. I really do. I mean, it's something I enjoy, but I do think there's this... A couple of whiskey brands have tried to piggyback the
beer scene.
But at the same time, I think, well, why not? It brings new people into it, and it's good. But I just wonder how much of the beer is really coming on. It's really, really...
I suspect almost nil. Like with this type going in an ice wine thing.
If it's anything, it's subtle.
But then it's a finish.
More importantly, I think it's less interesting as an experiment than the ice wine, which I've never heard of being done. And I think it's less interesting than, say, what Glenfiddich have done with a series of nine already, and they've used all very, very hard-to-find wine casks, recently used a rye cask, so rye whiskey into the cask, and you can. I mean, it tastes like a mellow rye whiskey. It works. So I think there is an element of gimmick in this. But what's important to say about what Glenfiddich are doing, and I think what all of these guys are trying to do, is just shake up the category a bit and
try and build
a bit of a story point around it. The experimental series is quite sort of glitzy, glamorous. It's like, well, they bring new whiskey drinkers, maybe bring those beer fans who are not whiskey drinkers to the category. So, yes, it's very subtle if it's there for someone who doesn't like
whiskey. I'll tell you what would be quite good is if anyone from Glenfiddich is listening to this, they're probably thinking, "What an idiot! He's talking nonsense."
No,
if
I there is thinking that, Ben.
No. I would love to know the science behind how the beer at such a low ABV can influence the wood and how that comes out in the finished product. They wouldn't just do it for a laugh. There must be some science behind it. So it'd be good to find out.
Yeah, it does. It will. Mm. I mean, we've both had cask whiskies before that have come out of beer barrels. I mean, it's about duration, but you can't have it in there for too long because it starts to override it. And I think that's the problem.
Oh, no, I'm just talking more about the beer being in the barrel rather than the whiskey.
But even if you put anything in a barrel for too long, like fish, you have to burn it.
Just
like shooting fish in a barrel. So there we go. Now, that was a real whistle stop of Speyside and casks. I'm trying to give you a flavour there, listeners, but do get involved
in
whiskey.
Nice. Speyside, I think, is a good introduction.
It's a good
really
place
good.
To start.
I enjoyed that.
I'm going to drink some more of this.
And I like them. So thank you, Tom. That was fascinating. And I think it's the first of several explorations of Scots regions. Sam, you are holding some kind of flavour wheel. Talk us through it. Is this something to do with your Legend of Liquor?
Yeah. So my Legend of Liquor this week is a lady called... Right, okay, well, here's a question.
Not
so
another lady. This is getting
I don't think I have done many ladies, so I consciously want to do a lady.
Yeah, you did the fella last week. Yeah.
I've done nearly all men. So I want to do a lady, and this week I'm doing Anne Noble, who's a creator of this. Listen, you can't see it, but it's called the Wine Aroma Wheel. Mm-hmm. And do Google it. It's really clever. So she's about 83 now, I think. She's an American. She's a chemist, and she used to work at the University of California in Davis. And she just realised they didn't really have any kind of sort of rigid set terminology to help consumers describe wine. So she's got a PhD, so she's super, super smart. And she basically came up after studying the techniques of wine tasting with this aroma wheel. And I ordered a few online, and I guess they got sent over from California. Mm. They're not expensive. And they're basically broken down into sections. So you've got chemical, pungent, oxidized, microbiological, you've got all kinds of faults.
It's the cheap stuff.
Yeah, floral. And it basically divides...
pink. I can see some pink there.
Yes, it's divided into colours. And yes, you've got fruity, and then fruity is broken into citrus, berry, tree fruit, tropical fruit, and other. Under citrus, you've got grapefruit and lemon. Under berry, you've got blackberry, raspberry, strawberry, blackcurrant. Under tree, you've got cherry, apricot, peach, and apple, and so on. So basically, it's just got a really helpful...
It's a lexicon for you to talk about the different flavours.
You should take a picture of that and... Put it on Twitter so the listeners can see it.
Well, I've made my own version.
Go on then.
Put your version on
Anne Noble
So Anne Noble is the pioneer of what essentially is a sort of a wine infographic to help consumers get a handle on aromas and flavours. Now, I've taken that a step further, and it's slightly different, and I've done my... Have you seen my wine flavour tree
before?
I haven't
seen this. I've seen the tree, but I haven't seen your fancy paperwork.
Very nice.
It looks very nice.
This is when I do tastings, and then people can write notes on the side.
Quite professional. I'm pretty surprised by this.
Don't sound so surprised.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And then it's basically you've got this wine flavour tree, which is mine, and do go to my website, themistressofwine.com, and it's this gorgeous tree, and what it's done is it's divided into sections, 40 common aromas and flavours that you can find in wine, 20 for white wine, 20 for red wine, and they're divided into sections according to the grape varieties you might be more likely to find them in. So for example, on the white wine side, you've got a section called orchard fruits, then you've got citrus fruits, green fruits and grass, stone fruits, and exotic fruits and spice. So if you buy a wine and you're trying to work out what you can taste and smell, it's just a guide. So you could go, right, I bought a Riesling, let's say. So you go up and you find Riesling, it's in citrus fruits, and you go, oh, okay, I'm meant to be finding some lime, lemon, tangerine, grapefruit, which you should do. And then it also tells you, okay, so if I like that, which other varietals on that branch might I like?
One of my favourite websites is...
But you're talking about me.
No, but what I was going to say is I like this website that tells you what to read next.
Okay,
so when you've had a book you really enjoy
it,
I want
this,
something
now, try
just
that.
Like this.
Yeah.
And that's what you need with wine. You need someone to
and
say,
I think,
well, this is just like it, but a bit different.
Well, that's the thing. So Anne Noble is the absolute sort of pioneer of trying to help consumers get a handle on vocab.
Yeah.
And then I've
You've nicked her idea.
I basically, I haven't nicked it.
I suggest
I've reinvented it into.
I like the tree.
It's kind of a small, almost a shrub. Could be a bush.
I like your bush.
It does look better. I have got in A3 posters.
Have you?
Brilliant.
Yeah. I do, yeah. Oh, with a bigger trunk.
So you can stick it on,
put it on my son's bedroom. What I'll do is I'll put it on his wall so that as I'm finally telling him a story at night, I can look at the tree.
What am I going to go?
5 more minutes. So, yeah. go to sleep, little man.
So, what I think you should put on your tree are little birds, and they represent snacks. So you can have like a,
this is important,
like a Twiglet's budgerigar that sits, that you overlay on the tree.
Here's a tip for you listeners.
That's a brilliant idea. Okay, so take this tree diagram. Okay, so there, look, it's just helping your business because sell this, and then it's like, where's repeat business? That's the secret of a business. Okay, and then what you do is
you
get a little piece of plastic that you put over the top
and overlay it with different
foods like Twiglets. Sausages,
scampi fries,
Twiglets dipped in hummus.
Yeah,
that's a bit of a tip for listeners.
Really nice. Let me think of other foods.
Pombe as well.
Donuts.
I mean, you've got all that, and
then you can globalize it. So if you were to sell this to China, it would be stuff like pork balls and prawn crackers.
Lovely.
Thank you very much, Sam.
So that we've covered that nicely. And just before swerving off, we get into dangerous territory. So that was Anne Noble.
Anne Noble, with
no E. Anne Noble, the creator of the famous wine wheel. It's A-N-N.
You meant the Noble.
Noble. Noble, as in Chernobyl.
And she still works today doing judging and stuff, and she's in her 80s, and I think she sounds
she's a
cracking bird.
A great niche.
And you've nicked her idea. Yeah. Well done. Now, thank you very much for listening, everyone. That was brilliant.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
And we will be back next week with more of this drink-based kerfuffle. Have a lovely week. Drink less, drink better. Drink within your 14 units if you possibly can. Have a lovely time. Cheerio.
Cheers. Ta-ta.
This was a Grand Cru podcast from 7 Digital.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com.